In the stark confines of my El Paso office, I encounter Captain Jason Fuller, physically present but emotionally absent, his body rigid, eyes distant. This catatonic soldier embodies the prison that trauma creates, a prison without walls where the mind becomes both captor and captive. Taking command, I insist we walk together in the park, a simple act that begins his journey back to life. This moment captures the essence of freedom that begins in the mind, the central revelation of my life's journey from Auschwitz survivor to healer. My story begins in 1944 Czechoslovakia, where I stood with my mother and sister Magda in a barren yard at Auschwitz, arms linked, unaware it would be our last moment together. Growing up Jewish in Czechoslovakia had already made us double minorities, but nothing prepared us for what followed. When soldiers pounded on our door that Passover morning, my father's tears as he circled the table, kissing each of us, suddenly made sense. In my thin blue silk dress, the one Eric kissed me in, I left behind everything but hope. What sustains us when everything is taken? In the cattle cars to Auschwitz, my mother whispered the wisdom that would save my life. No one can take away from you what you've put in your mind. This became my lifeline when Dr. Mengele separated us, sending my mother to the gas chambers while pushing Magda and me to the right. While dancing for Dr. Mengele in the barracks to the Blue Danube, I closed my eyes and transformed the dirt floor into the Budapest opera stage. I realized then that Mengele was more imprisoned than I. I remained free in my mind while he must forever live with his atrocities. My performance earned bread that I shared, teaching me that survival depends on connection. We created mental sanctuaries, imagining elaborate meals while starving, hosting beauty pageants in our gray dresses, discussing love amid death. When Mengele called me my little dancer and led me naked into his office, I retreated to my inner sanctuary, repeating, "Yes, I can," until a phone call interrupted his advances. My most powerful defiance came when I was placed in the death line while Magda stood in another. Without planning, I began doing cartwheels across the yard, expecting a bullet any second. In those moments of distraction, Magda ran to join my line. This spontaneous act saved both our lives, showing that even in our darkest moments, we retain the power to choose our response. Throughout the death march from Mauthausen to Gunskirchen, human connection became our lifeline. When I stumbled, girls formed a human chair to carry me, one recognizing me as the girl who shared bread at Auschwitz. This reciprocity amid starvation showed how our choices create connections that sustain us when strength fails. At Gunskirchen, with typhus ravaging my body, I chose to eat grass rather than human flesh. These choices preserved not just my life, but my humanity. When liberation came, a Black American soldier found me among corpses, pressing colorful chocolate candies into my hand, the first sweetness I tasted in so long. Freedom arrived not as a grand declaration, but as a simple human connection, a kindness that affirmed life could begin again. Have you noticed how profound transformations often begin with the smallest choices? A piece of shared bread, or helping another despite your own pain. These seemingly minor acts contain the seeds of our greatest strength. Freedom wasn't the jubilant celebration I once imagined. After liberation, we became a silent river of barely alive skeletons flowing from Gunskirchen. Reuniting with my surviving sister Clara brought joy tangled with grief as we confronted our losses. Of 15,000 deportees from our hometown, only 70 survived. I married Bela not out of love like with Eric, who died at Auschwitz the day before liberation, but as a step back into life. We maintained a silence about our wartime experiences, believing locking away the past would keep us safe. Yet ordinary moments triggered flashbacks to the camps, my body remembering what my mind tried to forget. Immigrating to America in 1949 couldn't distance me from trauma. Approaching New York Harbor, I pointed out Lady Liberty to my daughter Marianne, believing, "We're in America, the land of the free." For 20 minutes, I believed the past couldn't touch us here. But trauma followed in flashbacks, anxiety, and feelings of unworthiness. What happens when we build our lives around avoiding pain rather than pursuing wholeness? I divorced Bila at 40, blaming him for my stuckness, only to discover I'd become my own jailer. The gray fog wasn't our marriage, but the void I carried within. 2 years later, we remarried, our love becoming as stable as the mountain range, as enveloping and fluid as a sea. At 53, despite my success as a psychologist, I hadn't returned to Germany since the war. When invited to speak at Hitler's former retreat, Bella challenged me, "If you don't go to Germany, then Hitler won the war." His words revealed how avoiding Germany kept me emotionally trapped. Standing where Hitler once stood, I heard only silence and spring melting winter's grip. "I release you," I shouted to my old sorrow. This liberation led me to Auschwitz, where I finally performed my delayed grief ritual. At Birkenau, I relived the moment with Dr. Mengele when he asked if the woman beside me was my mother or sister. I answered, "Mother," sending her left to death while I went right toward life. I called to her across the years, begging forgiveness for not saying "sister," which might have saved her. Following Jewish tradition, I placed a small gray stone where my barracks once stood, saying goodbye to my parents and thanking Auschwitz for teaching me I was hurt but not broken, victimized but not a victim. Healing follows no universal template, but involves learnable steps. First, take responsibility for your feelings. Notice, accept, check, and stay with them rather than avoiding or blaming others. Second, take necessary risks for true self-realization. Third, release the wound by letting go of the past. Time doesn't heal. It's what you do with the time. In summer 2010, while addressing an army unit returning from Afghanistan, I experienced a profound realization. I was speaking to the 71st Infantry, the very unit that liberated me in 1945. Overcome with emotion, I shifted from asking, "Why me?" to, "Why not me?" I thanked these soldiers, telling them their sacrifice has meaning, ending with my signature high kick, declaring, "I made it." We cannot choose our circumstances, but we can always choose our response. This is the ultimate freedom, one that begins in the mind. Your suffering doesn't define you, your choices do. Even in your darkest moments, you retain the power to light a candle rather than curse the darkness. The prison door has always been unlocked. Will you choose to walk through it?